And we're ready.
All right, you want
to
start with the intro?
Yeah, I'll go ahead. Yeah. All right, thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of The Cigar Guys. We have a special guest today. We have Oliver Naval from United Cigar Group. He is here to talk about United Cigars, obviously, and the stuff that they do. So thank you for joining us today. All right. So real quick, what are you smoking right now?
I jumped in on the United Toro Natural. Just a reblend we did and reintroduction to the market. And that was just a nice one to kick off the show with.
Absolutely, yeah. So I'm smoking the La Giana right now. I'm almost finished, so I have to light something else up. But wanted to start off with a lighter cigar here. Mark, what are you smoking?
Yeah, I'm smoking the Garofalo La Familia. It's my first time having this. It's pretty good so far.
I'm almost done with a firecracker, but I'm about to light up a Yaya Bagua in a few minutes, so I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah,
you guys are laying down the portfolio. I love it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which Garofalo are you smoking?
It looks like the Toro.
Do you know? Is it a gold band?
The orange band.
The orange band, yeah.
The orange, all right, the sun grown.
Yeah, that one's really good. I had that the other day. But yeah, so we're smoking cigars from United Cigar Group, obviously, and we're going to enjoy those and talk more about them throughout the episode. But real quick, Oliver, introduce us to how you got into the cigar initially. Give us your origin story.
Jeez, this is gonna date everything. It goes way back. I started smoking cigars really back when I was about 16, and I'm 50 now, so. Do the math. And I got into the industry just out of a passion for it, a love of it. It had been in my family. My my father had been around it, and he was in the hotel business, and we spent a lot of time with a gentleman that was at the time his boss, Henry Scheline, who ended up I think he co-wrote it was like a pamphlet and did a lot of cigar dinners in Boston and then out in California. Wrote one with Richard DiMeola, who was the head of Lane Limited, which turned into Consolidated, which ended up turning into Altidus. So just a long history there. So that just kind of, I was just always around it and fell in love with it. And when I started smoking cigars, it was a more expensive habit, obviously. I shouldn't even call it a habit because, that's a term that I hate hearing. But it was, at the time when you're a kid, you have friends that are smoking cigarettes or friends that are not. I was in sports, really didn't want to get into anything too heavy, but just being around it, I always just wanted to have a cigar. So then that led into, my college years, and my first premium box that I purchased was actually a box of Theamos, and it was a 10-count box. I don't know if you guys remember that brand, but that was a Mexican brand at the time, and that was my first. Like I said, premium box. And then after I finished up college, I moved out to Las Vegas in 97. And in 98, I wanted to really just get a discount on cigars. So I looked a company up, started working for them. And that turned into 14 years with Fryboy Tobacco out in Las Vegas. And, we had about 12 retail locations, wholesale. I was on the, they brought me in after about a year into the office, to do the marketing for them. That's what I graduated with. So, started doing their marketing, web design, and that turned into more distribution. And, with them, we opened up Rumbar at the Mirage. We opened up Cafe Fuente at Caesars. And then we got into to more restaurants and then I left them in about 2012. And then I was just out of the business for a while. I was in hospitality, director of food and beverage, general manager for a couple restaurants, and just wanted to, originally coming back to Massachusetts, it was just hard to get into the business. I had done the retail side. I had done, the wholesale. I had done, dabbled in manufacturing, but there was really nothing out here in Mass for me to jump into. And then, 2016, is when I linked up with United Cigars and saw this company that was in its infancy. It had started in 2009, but there wasn't a lot behind it, but there was a portfolio that was very extensive, quality cigars,
cigars that that I never smoked, but were just, you know, absolutely beautiful. So I took the opportunity to jump on board, and now it's been, you know, it's never ever it's just, you know, growing the company.
Absolutely, yeah. And two, when we started looking into United Cigars more, and when you guys sent us some cigars, there was a lot of cigars in there that we didn't realize was a part of the United Cigar Group. And we had smoked them before, but we just never realized. And it's crazy to see now how big the portfolio is with this company. But go ahead and to as much as you can share, you know, the history of United Cigars, especially when you started and how it kind of expanded from there.
Yeah, so United Cigars started in 2009. It was United Cigar Group, and our website today is still United Cigar Group. But it was formed and started by David Garofalo, who was really working to bring retailers together, find a way to, you know, to have cigars that were priced right, that weren't heavily discounted online, because it, you know, the internet and the catalogs really started to make a big push. So he was trying to form this group, and that kind of went to the wayside. But there were still cigars that were in his portfolio that you know, were available to be sold nationally. La Giana is a brand that was named after his daughter that, you know, started over 25 years ago. We're coming on 30 years. So you know, when you look at everything that was formed with United and how it was trying to branch out and. And again, actually, not again, but if you look at what United Cigars is, it originally formed in 1901 as United Cigars, and it built up to over 3,000 retail locations. And then it kind of, you know, it dissolved in the 60s, and you know, Dave picked it back up in, you know, 2009, and had started a company behind it. And really, it started a brand before that called United Cigars. So, you know, when you take everything and look at it, then it was just, you know, after the United Cigar Group kind of dissolved, where it was, you know, pitching to retailers and forming a group, then it was just really a portfolio of cigars. And that's where I stepped in 2012 with the portfolio of United. 2012, that's where United Cigars picked up the Atabey, Byron, Bandolero lines from Selected Tobacco. And even then, you know, there were a couple, you know, opportunities to get in front of retailers, but it was really once a year. Selected Tobacco would have a booth at the PCA show in Las Vegas. And then that was it. There was no sales force. So 2016, you know, when I started, there was just a small amount of accounts, and, you know, it's humbling, but it's funny in a way to visit accounts or hear people talk about anything United, but in particular Atabey, where at the time it was not literally laughed out of shops, but, you know, laughed out of shops, because it was a $20-$30 cigar that they had never heard of. You know, that space was held, from what everyone was, you know, telling me, that space was held by you know, two larger players, Padron and Davidoff. They're like, yeah, this, you know, this will never work. You know, it's a cigar, it doesn't have a name. And yeah, you know, I took, you know, the ones that were nice, were, you know, we're still, you know, now come around and we're working with today. The ones that weren't overly friendly, then, you know, maybe it's just a harder account to work with now. But yeah, it was a long road, but it's been 6 years, and it's all growing well.
So what are your responsibilities look like as far as working for this organization? I know you're director of operations. Share a little insight on some of the things that you do in order to promote the brand.
Yeah, wow. So I mean, when you, again, United, small company, didn't grow up when it started it. 2016, I come on board, and it's him and I across from a desk from each other, saying, you know, what can we do with this? And when I looked at it, again, I smoked the portfolio. I thought everything was quality. Everything was a good product, and there were some that I loved and some that, you know, were good and they fit, but there were some that obviously stood out more than others. And I was, when you're looking at, you know, the Atabey and Byron, they stood out. But, you know, when I smoked the La Giana, I smoked the United, there were some that needed some, you know, what I felt was a reblend. There were some that needed some packaging updates, and everything needed branding. So starting with the company was really rebranding and looking at the United as a whole, because that is a cigar line for us, but it's also our brand. So, you know, handled the, you know, the redesign of United Cigars. And then we looked at La Giana to update, you know, that packaging. Then I went straight to Firecracker, and because Firecracker was one that I thought was a fantastic cigar and a great story behind it. But we just needed to, you know, give it some love. So I remember sitting, I was in the Dominican, and I was just sketching stuff out. And, I'm a sailor. I'm a Norman Collins fan, but Sailor Jerry fan. So all these old, you know, traditional Americana tattoos, and I was just sketching some stuff out, piecing stuff together. I gave that to our printer out in Dominican. They put the new packaging together, and then the you know, the Firecracker was reborn.
Yeah.
Gave it a little blend adjustment. The new Firecrackers now will have an open foot. I just felt like the closed foot. The you know, the tobacco felt it was drying out a little bit sooner, so the perception was that it could be dry. I gave a little bit of a bite, so just even trimming that's a simple thing, but you know, that was the adjustment. So really on a day-to-day, you know, it was everything from production to design to the blending to the marketing, and since then we've, you know, now been fortunate enough to get about 8 brokers, you know, representatives on the road, and you know, we hired a marketing person, Dan Davison, and then we just have another assistant of mine in the office to help with the calls and the organization. So it's been good growth over the last 6 years.
Very nice. Yeah, it's really great to see that company is expanding so rapidly.
Yeah, and I will say the Firecracker is probably one of my favorite, like, real short smokes. Like, if I'm on a quick run, like, I'll grab the Firecracker.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and we just launched the Black Bomb at the PCA this year. So that's a Maduro-wrapped Firecracker. And so we have plans on, again, it was a passion for that cigar. It was only one size, but it was only one blend. It was an Ecuadorian Habano wrapper. Blend, so that's what we just called the Firecracker, and I wanted to expand the line. So we have a couple things in the works. We've done a lot of, you know, limited releases with the Firecracker, and that's kind of the fun part of it for retailers and consumers, because you'll have something new in a Vitola that you're familiar with, and you know, size that you're familiar with, but we work with a different manufacturer. So, you know, this year we launched the All Saints St. Patrick's Day Firecracker.
Yep.
Right at you know, St. Patrick's Day. We did the Rojas, we worked with Rojas, Noel Rojas, on the Elote Firecracker for Cinco de Mayo. And then we did the big launch of the EPC Pledge for the 4th of July.
Nice. You guys have such a big, extensive cigar line. Is it hard to keep track of everything?
Yeah, it's a challenge. I think the biggest challenge, and it's all, you know, we try to do it on, you know, keep things in order. But you know, we do it on a full sheet. So if you look at a box of cigars, you know, it's more than just, hey, you know, I want 10,000 you know, cigars made for this run, or I want, you know, 20,000, whatever the number is. But you have to look at the bands that are on the cigar that we print. Then you have to have the boxes made. If there are any stickers on the outside of the box, stickers on the inside of the box, you know, UPC barcode. So you have to keep track of everything that goes into the production of just one box. And, you know, when I say, you know, the factory will keep track of it, but, you know, there are times where it's, you know, we're calling out the numbers and saying, hey, we're going to run low. I don't know if we're going to have enough for this production. Can you guys double check? And, yeah, if we hadn't checked before the production goes in, you know, then, you know, we'd be behind because we'd be short on, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah. So let's, talk about the United Cigar line itself, basically what we would call your house blends. I know there's a natural and a Maduro. So, and you said that those were one of the first ones that you guys started once you jumped on?
That was one of the first lines that I wanted to work on.
Okay.
Because the branding just, and you guys validated it by saying we didn't know that these were part of the portfolio. So when you look at the firecracker now, it has a United coin on the back. Everything's kind of, you know, I'm switching everything to that direction. So there was new artwork that needed to be done. So that means you're talking in the printer, there's new plates that have to be done for the die cut, for the printing, for the embossing. So there, you know, multiple steps, but United was the first one that, you know, I wanted to work on just to, you know, keep what it was when it originally started, but just kind of update it and, you know, liven up the colors. And, you know, even now some of the, I don't want to say the older bands, but you know, with this logo, at the top, there are, you know, the three stars. Well, now those will be in gold and they'll be embossed. And so it's just an addition, just little things like that we try to tie into everything. On the firecracker, you know, there's an eagle, and you know, the firecracker just to me had strength and power. So, you know, I wanted to put the, you know, this big eagle on it, and then the talons, you know, are holding, you know, arrows, and then there's a big red anchor behind it. And that red anchor is just tying in not only to the, you know, that Americana art, you know, traditional, you know, tattoo of Norman Collins, but it was also tying it into a brand that we knew we were going to come out with, which was Red Anchor, and we came out with that a few years after.
And so
we try to have a story behind everything.
Yeah. So you guys actually do all of the printing of the bands and stuff in-house. You don't outsource that at all?
No, I shouldn't say in-house, but we send it to the printer in the Dominican.
Okay, yeah.
Most of our stuff comes out of the Dominican. We have you know, another company that we do one band production out of Miami, out of Florida.
Very nice.
But most of the stuff is, yeah, through someone else.
You mentioned Red Anchor line. I just had my first one just yesterday. It was phenomenal. You guys recently have released some new sizes. Can you like go over that or talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. No, I'm glad you enjoyed it. That's that was a project that we worked on with the Kellner family, because the Red Anchor is a brand that's over 250 years old. We launched it last year with only 250 boxes in one size, the Admiral size, which is a Toro 6x52. So we worked with KBF, Kellner Boutique Factory, and that's Hendrick Jr. And, you know, his father, Anki, his family was originally from Holland. So that was the, you know, the first family that we approached, and we said, we want to work with you on this. We want this to be, you know, part of you and who you are and, you know, your heritage. So, you know, we sat down, we worked, you know, talked about a profile we were looking for. And this was one of the, I don't want to say easier projects to do when it comes to blending, but when you sit down with, you know, the Kellner family, and especially when you have a couple blends that have been made and you fall in love with one, and then you have Hanky, not only Hendrick Jr. who is making the cigars, but then you have the father, Hanky, who smoked it and says, this is the blend. It's hard to say, no, we want to change it. And, yeah, he was pretty spot on as well. So that was an easier blend to kind of finish on our end. But it's a fantastic cigar. And then this year we just launched, the Gunner, which is a 6.5x43. Those will start shipping to retailers, beginning of September, end of this month, and the Captain, which is a 5x50. So they all kind of have that nautical, you know, nautical theme. We'll have the Commodore, which is a 7x50 coming out probably October sometime.
Very nice. Yeah, and I know you mentioned already, you know, the Atabey and the Byron. So let's talk about the cigars from the Alfonso line.
Yeah, so you know, when you look at premium cigars, or not premium cigars, when you look at luxury items in general, you know, what makes them luxury? Why should I pay more? Why is it deserving of that price? And that was always the first thing that I got, when I would sit down with, you know, with anyone on it. And I was even the same one when I first sat down, because I was coming from Las Vegas, where we were already higher priced, You know, congratulations to Nevada for lowering their tobacco tax. All the retailers fought that. Mm-hmm. They went down from 30% down to a cap of 40 cents, I think. So that's a huge win for them. But, you know, so bringing it back to when I was there, we had a high tobacco tax. We were inside of casinos. We had a captured audience that couldn't leave from the table sometimes. So even though we had 12 retail locations throughout the casinos, we also had cigarette hostess programs. And on those trays, on the cigarette hostess trays, we used to sell the Mac Nano Portofino for $20, which is still to this day offensive. It's a high price. But so I was coming from a market where I saw high-priced cigars, but even then, $12, $15, $20 was an expensive, you know, cigar. So when I sat down and I first tried the Atabe, I was blown away. And then I just wanted to learn what makes it so different. And, you know, one thing I want to stress is the process makes it different. So if we take a cigar or anything, we close our doors and we come back in 5 years, we can agree that everything in that room is 5 years old, right? Because 5 years have passed. And that's absolutely true. In the market today, there are some cigars that are 2 years old, 5 years old, 6 years old, 15-year-old tobacco, this and that. But that's just age. That's just time. Anything can happen in that time. Nelson Alfonso, who is the man behind Selected Tobacco, puts his cigars through an aging process. He has multiple steps. He shares just a little bit and allows us to share just a little bit because he doesn't want it to be, you know, copied in a way. But I kid with him. I said, I don't know if anybody's going to go through this process the way you do because of the time and the effort that goes into one cigar. So when you look at the Atabey Byron Bandolero and the new Alfonso that came out, the Byron 1850, all of his cigars go through this aging process. And what that is yes, the tobacco's aged. It goes through extra fermentation. The cigars are rolled in Costa Rica. And that's kind of where the real process starts. I should say his fermentation style is a little bit different, and that's what he kind of keeps, you know, a little bit secret. But the rolling process, his rollers, the pairs down there only roll about 150 cigars per day, which is about a half, just for round numbers, about half of what a cigar pair will roll in day. So already there, he wants to make sure that the quality is at its peak. Once the cigars are rolled, he ships cigars to Madrid, where he's living, and he has aging rooms there. And those aging rooms are much different than your typical aging room, or at least the aging room that I knew of. He uses five different cedars. He'll use Cuban, Spanish, Mexican, Brazilian, and Lebanese cedars. And then for the first year, for any cigar that's rolled, for the first year, he'll put it into one aging room. And he'll bring humidity down, and then he'll bring it back up. So the cigar, when the humidity is brought down, it's shrinking. Right? It's almost drying out. So it's purging any other impurities in the cigar. Then he'll increase the humidity. So when the cigar is breathing in all the different cedar notes, because the water droplets will go into the cedar will clean the water, and then the water and the vapors will come back in, and the cigar breathes in all those cedar notes when it goes back up to 70 plus. After that first year, when he feels that the cigars are ready, then he transfers all the cigars out to a separate room, and then they continue the aging process. So all the Bandoleros will kind of be in one room, Atabey, Byron, and in those rooms, then they'll take on the different aging years. So Bandoleros aged in that process for about 1 to 2 years. Byron, depending on the blend and the century, will be aged anywhere from 3 to 5 years, and the Atabey will be aged for a minimum of 5 years post roll. So if you've experienced, if you smoked it, I don't know if you've noticed that on the palate, it's just very clean. And then even when you're done smoking, you're left with this very clean palate where you're able to taste all the subtleties and all the characteristics of the cigar, but it doesn't have that little bite of, well, I just smoked the cigar. It's just incredibly clean.
Right. And so we've smoked the Atabey. It's been, we started smoking the Atabey probably about 2 or 3 years ago. And you're right. I think that age that's put on it, it allows for a clean palate. That aftertaste that you would get with some cigars is not there. And me personally, I smoke the Atabey quite often. I think my favorite was the Lancero size.
I would have to agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I kind of moved away from Atabey, and then the Alfonso came out. And, you know, it's a $50 cigar, and I'm like, oh, you know, let me try it. And it's honestly my favorite lighter cigar, my favorite Connecticut, if you'd say. I absolutely love it. I love that there's, like, notes of cherry in there, at least for me. And it's honestly probably my favorite cigar from that line, absolutely, like, without a doubt. So I try to get those as much as I can, try to not pay full price for them, but they're excellent cigars, and I'm actually, that's probably my favorite now from that line.
Yeah, that Alfonso line, when it came out, or even when it was discussed, because we saw it from Nelson when he has these renderings, and he's talking about the line and what he's doing. Because, again, when these cigars are resting, he has them done. They're all the cigars are finished. They're resting, and they're aging, and they're going through this process. When he was talking about Alfonso, and even the 1850, and he's saying, well, it's going to be this tobacco is a blend between Atabey and Byron, so it's a little, you know, it's a little bit stronger. And then he started using French oak in the aging rooms, only for Alfonso and Byron 1850. So that added another layer of complexity. And I remember, you know, when he was, you know, like I said, when he was talking about it, we're like, how can it be better than, and I shouldn't even say that, like, it's not better than Atabey and Byron, but it was just, it's like another level. It's just a different experience. We sat down, we smoked it, and I'm with you. It's just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful blend.
So right now, what would you say is your personal favorite cigar that you guys produce?
I've been smoking a lot of the Red Anchor lately, because I absolutely love it. It just reminds me of what, you know, a cigar, or necessarily was, but it was just, there's this elegance about, you know, the Red Anchor that I really like. And the Gunner, that size, the 6.5 by 43, to me is just fantastic.
Yeah, I think too, a smaller ring gauge, I would say that my ideal size is between like a 42 and a 50, but I love a good Lancero or a short Corona, something like that, because that smaller ring gauge just really brings the flavors together. So I'm actually really excited to try that size.
Yeah, and the Spiritus, that Lancero that you're talking about on Atabey, that line of Atabey, you're looking at 12 different sizes, and they're all very, you know, very unique. There are some similarities when you get to like Delirios, Ritos, Misicos, that vary from a 55 ring gauge to a 56 ring gauge, but that, even that slight variance, like, there's just something different. But then when you go to the Lancero, the Spiritus, I feel like the strength picks up. You can really taste the wrapper. There's no Ligero in that one, by the way, but it's a stronger Atabey. So I'm a big fan of the Lancero as well.
When you're enjoying a cigar, what's your personal drink of choice? Like, for me, it's whiskey, but can you kind of go over how it complements or enhances your cigar experience?
Yeah, so I think that's always a tricky question for me, because every palate's different, right? I look for things that are a little, you know, a little more subtle. I've been drinking a lot of tequilas lately. Casanoble has been a nice one to sip while I'm having a cigar. So I look for something that, you know, sometimes maybe, and on the tequilas, like the extra añejos or the añejos, there's a viscosity to it, right? So it feel like it almost cleanses the palate, you know, for me. But if I'm doing if I'm tasting blends, or I'm sitting down at, you know, it's really a sparkling water or a tea, a lot of green tea at the office.
No coffee.
Like, that's a very, very easy going.
What about coffee in the morning with one?
Yeah, coffee in the morning, man. That's just an incredibly good pairing.
Especially an espresso?
If the espresso is done right, sure. You know, coffee, right? There's some bad espressos, and then there are some great ones. So, yeah, coffee is a great compliment, because it's just, you know, this rich, you know,
there's a richness, a robust taste. You're able to taste the, you know, earth and, you know, these, just these rich notes, and the tobacco just, it complements, they sit well together. So coffee is just, I don't want to say that's an easy one. That should be an easy one for everybody, because that is a fantastic compliment. And when you might add a little bit of, if you're going, further south down the, Florida, Miami, the sugar levels kind of increase a little bit. So, you got to watch that, depending on what you're smoking. But coffee all day.
Yeah. Like you said too, I mean, coffee should be easy, because I think most people drink coffee even if they're not cigar smokers. So that's a great thing to find out. It's like, oh, I could pair cigars with coffee. And a lot of cigar smokers like to hear that, especially when they're getting into it at first.
Yeah. Yeah. Coffee is the easy one. Like I said, everyone has a different palate. I mean, there are some people that just don't drink. For me, scotches and whiskeys have kind of gone away from. My palate, it just seemed like it opened up the taste buds too much, or there was just too much. They were almost fighting each other. If you don't have to necessarily, or you don't want to concentrate on either one, and you just want to enjoy the night, then yeah, a whiskey, a scotch, fantastic, and same with tequilas. But in a way, we've gotten away. I've been smoking cigars so long, we've gotten away from like what a cigar was meant to do, and why did you get into it? What was the purpose? It was to enjoy that that hour plus, right? To escape. And the more we sit there, and think about, what are the flavor notes that I'm supposed to get? What are the tobaccos? If you do your research on the cigar before, and that it's got, whatever, just to keep it simple, Dominican, Nicaragua, it has a Ecuadorian Habano wrapper. I know these are the tobaccos used, but it's meant to bring it together, because it is a way to unite everything around you. If it's a time that you're sitting there and smoking by yourself, you're united with that cigar. You're sitting there and you're escaping in that moment, right? And if you're sitting down with other people, you have to escape in that moment. So I think we sometimes we just overthink the whole smoking process, and a cigar is a cigar. And that's a great quote from, I'll give credit, he won't even know it, he won't remember it, but that's George Padron. When I was on the retail side in Las Vegas, we had this one customer that would come in, and he would just pick every single thing from Cigar Aficionado and say, oh, well, I'm looking for a black cherry, leathery, woody, cedary, cigar. And he would just do this to us constantly. And we're like, dude, all right, well, try this one. And Jordan, Jordan was there doing an event, and this guy tried it with him. He's like, I'm looking for the black cherry, leathery, whatever, strawberry, banana, vanilla, whatever. And George was just like, man, it's just a cigar. And the guy just like stopped. And I thought it was brilliant. It was like the easiest thing to say, but it was like, 100% right. Light up, smoke it, enjoy it, and whatever. Look, if you want a glass of milk with it, that might be too much coating of the palate, but yeah. Grab what you love. But I guess the long way around that was the answer. But for me, I've been drinking a lot of different tequilas. Mm-hmm. If I'm drinking a spirit,
Yeah, I think right too.
Sam Summer.
I think too. Tequila is becoming more popular among cigar smokers, especially with companies like Casa 1910 that are promoting pairing their cigars with tequila. And people are starting to realize that there's actually a lot of great tequilas out there, like different añejos and stuff like that. And tequila is not just for shooting when you're trying to get drunk, but there's actually a lot of tequilas that you can sit down and enjoy either by themselves or with your cigar. And too, like you said, I mean, at the end of the day, the cigar that you are smoking, you should be enjoying it and not specifically maybe going after certain flavor notes. Because sometimes you go after those flavor notes and the cigar that you recommended might not taste good to you. So at the end of the day, you got to find, different cigars that you just enjoy. And even you know, you'll enjoy cigars that have flavor notes that you maybe typically don't go after, but the cigar itself is just so good that you can sit back, relax, and enjoy that one.
Yeah, and sometimes, look, sometimes the experience or the environment is the best pairing for that cigar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, because you might be on a golf course, or you know, you're sitting there at a, you know, at a wedding, or you're with friends, and you're, you know, it was something that, yeah, it might have been your first cigar, and your friend's introducing you to the cigar, or your father, or your, you know, uncle, or whoever, but they're introducing you to the cigar, and it's that experience becomes the best pairing for it, because it makes that cigar phenomenal. And then as you grow, or maybe even the next week, you're trying to smoke it again, and it's just nothing like what you remember. So that just means that the environment that you're smoking in enhances the experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll tell you this too. Sure. Mark will attest to that. You know, there's been times where he's had a certain cigar and he was like, oh my God, this cigar was amazing, I have to try it again. And the next time he tries it, he's like, man, this cigar tastes terrible. Yeah. And it turns out that he had that cigar when he was having a great time. He was out with friends.
Yep, I was at a bachelor party.
And then that, yeah, like you said, the experience made the cigar taste that much better. And then when you sit down and have that cigar, you're like, oh man, what am I, like, why does it taste so bad? What am I missing here? So you're exactly right. The experience will definitely impact how you enjoy certain cigars. Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so is there a specific moment or experience for that you have experienced as United in the cigar industry?
I think, is there an experience that you had that was kind of like your turning point in the industry? Maybe it's something that made you feel like, you know, wow, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, whether it was with United or before United, because I know you're in the industry for a long time. But is there a moment that you can pinpoint that you remember saying, wow, like, this is something I'm really passionate about, this is something that I want to do?
Yeah, you know, there are several just, you know, points that kind of hit. But I guess if I, you know, take it back, you know, you said you've been in the industry for a long time, and now I'm thinking that. So that made me think about, I think it was my first trip in, when I was in the business, to the Dominican. It might have been 99. And I was able to sit down and spend a day with Carlito, and it was myself, you know, the owner of Fry Boy Tobacco, Michael Fry, and then, you know, the buyers. It was the three of them. We spent the entire day going from the field to the factory, to, you know, sitting down having lunch, and, you know, he's driving us around. We're just talking. It's very, you know, very personal, very intimate. We're in the, you know, in the barns, and at that moment, it, because prior to that, you know, I saw everything, and I smoked cigars, and I loved it, but I had never really been to, you know, the factory at that point. I mean, I was in my whatever mid 20s at the time, so I'd never had that experience, and I don't know if, I mean, I think factories still had tours and they allowed people in, mm-hmm. but I don't know if it was as heavy of a, you know, marketing tool as it is today. So, you know, that experience, you know, and that trip alone, you know, I sat with Lito Gomez, and that's what I had first been introduced to Ochi Blanco. You know, so that trip kind of opened my eyes to everything. I was like, wow, I never thought I would be in the cigar business. I graduated with a marketing degree, you know, from the East Coast, which, you know, yes, there were shops, but, you know, these were the old dingy shops. They weren't like the lounges that we see today. You know, like, you know, a couple of our, we have the Frisco in Frisco, Texas, we have the Atta Bay Cigar Lounge with Industrial Cigars. And then we have the Byron Cigar Lounge in Schaumburg. And when you look at those lounges, if I had those back then, I mean, now you see, like, wow, this is, you know, people are really into this. People are, you know, investing a lot of money on the retail side, and they're giving this experience to their consumers. You know, yeah, this is something that you can make a living out of. But when I first started, it was, I don't want to call it a side gig, but it was a side gig. It was a side hustle. It was, A couple hours, I went into the interview and I told him, yeah, I can't work weekends, I can't work nights, only because I was young and I'm in Vegas. I'm not working those hours. So, but I had this passion for cigars and I had knowledge. So I'm coming in, they're like, oh, no, you actually have, you know what you're talking about. You're passionate about it. We want to bring you on and we'll see what can develop from there. But yeah, I think that first trip, like I said, it must have been 99. I don't think it was 98, but it might've been fall of 98, but either way, like that first trip really, opened my eyes to everything that was possible.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, we had a conversation recently with Z from Cordoba Morales, and that conversation came up and he said, you know, basically if you're, especially when you're first getting into the cigar industry, if making money is what you're going after, you're in the wrong industry. You got to start out with passion and you want to be able to do it, because especially if you're starting a new brand or something like that, the money's not going to be there for a while. You got to grind for it, for sure.
Oh yeah, 100%. You can come into the business with money,
right? and that topic came up as well.
Not leaving money.
That topic came up as well. There's a certain brand that we talked about where a guy was very, very well off and was able to start, 20 lines of cigars right off the bat, and that's great. But for I think most people, especially building a brand from the ground up. If you don't have, millions or billions of dollars to throw into it, then it's definitely going to be a grind and it's definitely going to be a climb up that ladder.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, the cigar smokers, consumers, we're so much more educated than before. There were books out before and there's some great books out there that, helped me start, but now you have access to everything, right on your phone. Mm-hmm. So you can look up the cigar, the company, the story behind it. So we're much more educated, and that means that if some brand or company comes into market and they're throwing money or they're doing whatever and they got all these crazy promos and they're giving stuff away and they're getting into consumer hands. In the end, if it's not a good product and it's not consistent, it's not gonna last. We'll see a few years and you'll phase out. I mean, just look at the history of cigars, even the cigar boom, way back when, in the early 90s, there are brands that you can look up now that are just no longer around that were bangers back then. They were top brands, but they just, didn't, for whatever reason, just didn't make it through.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, you said it, especially today, with so much competition, at the end of the day, if the product is not good quality, people just, they're not going to go for it. So in today's culture, in the cigar culture, you definitely have to have a product that is top of the line that people are going to enjoy, or else you might just get, squeezed out by all these other guys. New guys that are coming in are just, big companies that are producing a lot of great stuff all the time.
Yeah, I think for the most part, and this is one thing. I teach my kids, and I live by stay humble, because this industry and life in general can just take everything away from you, in just a flash. So stay humble and stay true to your brand, true to what your company is and what you want it to be. And it may be a slower path, but it will be a stronger foundation for the future. And that's, that was what I believed for United Cigars. I wasn't looking to, just be this, overnight sensation. I wanted this to be my last stop, but I want to grow with the company. I want to see the company grow. I want this to be, hopefully where I end my career.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I've seen all the growth and all the changes and they've given me the opportunity to kind of have free reign. Obviously, I have to get the okay when I'm spending a lot of money, but if I can justify it and I have it make sense, and then I follow through and there's success behind it, then I have the support. So
exactly.
Yeah, it's a crazy industry.
In your opinion, how does like cigar culture in different regions influence and, preferences in certain cigar profiles?
Well, I mean, there are different, so different regions have different, there's different climates, right? So, and different, different lifestyles and, different nightlife, different, different jobs and everything. So you go to all these different regions and we'll see, I'll see some cigars that are very successful. Even our brand, I'll just say, our brand that can be successful in one region. And then in another region, it's a slower move or, even a shop. I mean, it's not only regions. I mean, there are some shops, that, one will be 5 miles down the street. And I've actually purchased cigars that I love that are not in our portfolio, but that I saw in a discount bin, in a shop that was, miles down the road from somewhere else that it was very successful. It's, I don't know. I would, to answer that, I guess it's a little hard to say. If there was just a black and white, handbook to say this is what works, I think we'd all be successful. But there's just no rhyme or reason for a lot of things. Again, fall back to, staying humble and sticking with, what you believe, and then it will grow. Because I don't want to sound negative, but we proved some retailers wrong because they didn't want to give it a chance. It wasn't a name that people were kicking down the doors for. So that means that they'll have to do a little bit of work to get it into the hands of consumers. But once we do that, and once they accept us into the store, they put us on the shelf, we do a small event. And even if it's a cut light or, I've done these, in fact, on Friday, I'm going up to Queensbury, New York, to Queensbury Pipe and Cigar, and we're doing it's called a meet and greet, but I wanted to take away the M-E-E-T and I made it M-E-A-T. So it's a meet and greet. So we're cooking up and the raffle items will be, steaks and packs of bacon and things like that. But when you buy a box, you're going to get a steak and a potato and then another cut of meat. And, so it just kind of makes it entertaining. So, every region is just different, but even within the regions, it's hard to say what's successful and what isn't.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I mean, if you're serving food, people are coming.
exactly. And if you make it, you make it fun. I think, again, the industry, when you look at it as a whole, maybe there are other industries that do this, but we've kind of taken cigars that are an artistry and, there's so much time from the moment that the seed is planted to the time that the cigar is cut. There's so much time there, but then we take the cigar on the shelf and we say, all right, well, I'm going to buy three. What do I get free with that? I want a hat. I want a cutter. I want a lighter. I want this. I want that. I want a discount. What do you, if I'm buying a box, I'm not going to buy it unless there's a discount. I'm going to go to this store. They give me X amount off, or I'm going to go online, or I'm going to go to this catalog because I can get it for this price. You don't go into a restaurant and order a steak and then say, what do I get for free? Am I getting my bourbon for free? No, it's about the experience and you're appreciating what that is, what you're buying. But cigars, I think we're looking for what's the handout with it. So I try to do, with United, we try to do things that are, maybe a little different because we don't have the budget of some of these larger companies. So this meet and greet is great because everyone, to your point, you're getting a meal. We're asking them to do something, but we'll give you a meal so that we can sit down, we can have a meal together, we can share a cigar together and enjoy that experience. So that night is it's a fun night.
Yeah, and we've said this many times before, and you kind of said it yourself, especially if either the blender or the owner or someone like you is there at the lounge, hanging out with everyone, talking to everyone, smoking cigars with you. That in itself is kind of a plus for consumers because they get to talk to you and they get to build a relationship with you. And I think that a lot of times is also very important when they're thinking about what cigar they want to pick, what cigar they want to smoke. They say, I like this company. And then they think about the time that they met you and how it was a great time. And that kind of goes back to the experience is, a really good pairing for specific cigars.
Yeah. 100%. And, And I'm looking forward to, like, even sharing the United, you know, our new blend for United. Like, this, the United is the first one that I can say, you know, I took, you know, hands-on approach to blending. Because there's a fine line between, you know, somebody that's blending a cigar to somebody that's sampling, you know, blended cigars, and let's see, you know, do we want A, B, or C? So, you know, United, with the new United blend, like, I was, you know, digging into bales, and it took about a year and a half to get the percentages right, you know, of what we're using. And, you know, I tried the Dominican broadleaf for the first time there, and I wanted to use it in the filler, and then, you know, tobacco from the Quisqueya region. And then it was how am I gonna, you know, now adjust the percentages to make it so for what I wanted for my palate, I wanted something that was medium bodied but not overly spicy, you know, to take away, because again, I love food, so I go back to food a lot. If I have a steak, I don't want to throw a bunch of Tabasco on it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I want to taste the tobacco. So sometimes a cigar is either, but it can be under fermented, and some people consider that strength, because they don't understand that under fermentation, that strength comes from those ammonias and it hits you in the back of the throat, and it's overpowering, but it's not a good overpowering. So I wanted to, I just wanted to have something where I could taste these tobaccos that I really enjoyed, and that's a United blend.
Absolutely.
So where do you see United Cigar Group in the next 5 years?
Next five. I wanted to see as like just a household name that we're in the pool with everybody, because we've been, you know, there guys and you know, a lot of the boutique companies that have been in the pool, and we've kind of been on the outside. It's like, okay, all right, kids, out of the pool, if you don't swim, and you know, we're the kids on the side of the pool. So you know, we're gradually getting closer to the edge, and you know, hopefully one day people, you know, put us in the same, you know, same poll as, you know, some of the big guys out there. And, you know, we're just, again, just staying humble and working our way there.
Of course. I can see that happening too. I think that this company in particular can definitely go the distance and, you know, make its mark in the industry. Absolutely. From what I've seen and the cigars that we've smoked, I think it's definitely possible. But again, like you said, staying humble is the biggest thing, especially in this industry, because if you're too cocky, that pushes away a lot of people too.
It does. But there are some that are overly cocky, and there, you know, there are some that are, you know, a little more edge, and maybe, you know, negative, and it seems to attract some too. So that's what I mean. If you're just an angrier person, or you see that, you know, more negative than in the positive in life. But if that's who you are, then just be that person, and people will gravitate towards it, because you're true to yourself and you're true to the brand. And you know, look, we all have family members or friends, and it's like that, you know, that one guy that's in your friend group, like, oh, fucking, you know, whatever, fucking Jim, yeah, he's doing it again, but he's still part of the friend group, but
right,
because you know that's just him, like that's just who he is. But he's part of the friend. So as long as you stay true, you're just not burning bridges, and it'll be good.
Absolutely. So hey, we're gonna wrap it up here soon. I appreciate you for joining us. I appreciate you for sharing your story and all the insight on the cigar industry. But again, thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of the Cigar Guys podcast. Be sure to check out United Cigars. We're gonna put their link in the description. You can go check out all their great lines over there. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you can stay updated with when we upload new episodes. Go to our link tree as well. We have a lot of short content on our social media, including some of the United Cigars on there. So go check it out. But again, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you guys next time.
See ya.
See you guys.
See ya. Thank you.
Hey, appreciate it, man. Thank you.